Hey idiots, I'm Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an idiot sometimes. Aren't we all? If you love to laugh as much as you love to learn about new people, I have a podcast for you called Hey Idiots. It's 50% hilarity, 50% curiosity, and 100% insanity. My guests include experts in their field, sometimes just other stand-up comedian friends, and occasionally absolutely insane people who have somehow convinced me they're knowledgeable about a topic. If you're into expanding your mind or just laughing out loud, check out the Hey Idiots podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
5 to 10 minutes of just us bullshitting,
okay,
having fun, go to commercial break, and then Brooke start her book.
Okay.
Cool.
Alrighty. Are y'all ready?
Ready.
Oh, do we have a name yet? Do we want to go... This is the beginning of episode 2 of Edging, a horror book club. That's whore, whoreor.
We have a name.
We finally figured out a name.
Well, I think all of our personalities really lend themselves to edging for whatever various self-flagellating
reasons. We should explain why it's called edging.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think we should definitely tell people why, because otherwise it's like, why are y'all calling yourselves edging? Brooke, you actually had a great... Brooke is who came up with edging. I came up with horror when we were discussing having this podcast.
I didn't come up with anything.
Ian's just fucking here.
Well,
living off of the coattails of women, as most...
Actually, even more diminutive, Ian is our muse, because it was Ian that inspired the name.
Wasn't me that expired? What?
You expired it because.
Did I say expired?
Yeah. So a lot of people don't think this because if you can see us, if you're watching the video, Bridget and I are two very hot women and Ian is a man. So you might think like, oh, we're the muses. Not true.
It's Ian.
Ian is our muse. And so Ian was talking about a book in our last recording and doing a really good job of edging us both about the book. And where it was going to go. I've started reading it, and I was so excited to read it.
What was the name of mine and Brooke's
like
boy in that
book? Emotional edging, I would say, right?
Emotional. Yeah, what's our boyfriend in that book?
Hopper.
I haven't even met Hopper yet, but I've been reading the book because I pulled a muscle in my back 2 days ago, and I couldn't move. So I was like, I guess I'll read. And I was like sitting on the couch like, it's very good, but you told us...
What was the name of that book again? We should plug it one more time.
Night Film by...
Marisha Pezel.
Our girl.
P-E-S-S-L.
It's amazing so far. It's one of those books that, as you know, Ian and I can't read. It's really hard for us. We listen to a lot of books. I'd recommend not even going Kindle. Just go paperback hard copy. Enjoy the whole thing. But it was so cool because you told us so many things that happened. But I felt like even though you gave us some release, I was like, I don't know enough. There's more to this story.
Well, you've been reading it. You know that I left a lot out.
Yeah.
I left a lot out because the point of the show is not to like ruin books for you. We don't want to replace the book. We want to get you to the point where you can't not read the book.
We don't want you to climax.
We don't want. Yeah, exactly.
We want you to edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want you to edge with us. You spend every day of your life edging on that coffee that you don't know if you should or shouldn't treat yourself to. You edge on deciding if you should buy that thing. Do you deserve it? We think you do. We think you deserve it. And so we're here to bring you things that we think you deserve to finish.
I got negative $1.50 in the bank account right now. I don't even edge anymore. I'm just buying whatever comes into my mind.
I am also personally on the edge of financial ruin. What is it to say we are all edging? I think we all
edge. It's
tax season.
I can't reach, but cheers.
Cheers.
So another fun fact about today's episode, After the last episode, when we decided to do this recording again, which is like our fourth or fifth recording,
mm-hmm. yeah, we've practiced a few times.
We all decided, hey, let's drink, have a pizza, you know, get talking. Because even though we're all really good friends, when microphones are in front of us, it seems like we just don't want to talk. We drank a lot.
And we talked for a long time.
And we talked for 3 hours.
And
yeah,
now
not
we can
about
only do like
books.
One episode.
I don't know, but I assume that this is exactly what it's like when you do like a couch session or maybe like post couch session, your first porn. You're like, okay, loosen up. And then it's been 3 days and you're like, we got to film this porn.
Like, you're just hanging out pre-porn.
Yeah, you're just like, you've eaten the pizza, you've all partied, and you're like, God damn, we came here to film.
Yeah.
Because I imagine it's kind of like when we record, we rent out a house, you know, for like a big session, for our fall series, for our fiction show. We have it all scripted, we're ready to go. But then, you know, like you're hanging. Like we all got lives, we don't get to hang out all the time, so you just like get caught up in hanging out, and then you're like, wow, we have got to do what we came here for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I see my husband and the people I work with, and I don't get to see a lot of people outside of that. So whenever I see you all, we're always talking about tons of things, even though we text all the time, mm-hmm. but we don't get to be in person with each other a lot.
It's different.
Do you all ever think that everybody we rent an Airbnb from to do our big recordings thinks we're doing porn?
I hope so.
We've talked about it in the past, especially when we were doing the press kit for 13 originally, and we had Brianna. Brianna, mm-hmm. I'm so sorry, Brianna.
Brianna, we love you.
We love you so
and much. Miss you.
I will learn your name one day, I swear to God. We all came in there into this one hotel room.
Then
Brianna shows up with all this fucking like photography and film equipment. We're like, they definitely think we're making
porn
in this room.
And it's like Ian. And at the time, we were like 24 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, which I mean, you're only 10 years older than us, but still, it's a guy and then like early 20s females walking in.
And like dressed for a photo shoot.
Yeah.
Dressed for like the press photos for 13.
Makeup done.
Yeah.
I feel like it's even more suspicious, though, when we roll in hot to anywhere and Bridget and I are both like looking casual. That's how you're really like, oh, no, so this is a porn. Because I feel like if you see people already dressed up, you're like, maybe this is a porn, but it may as well be college humor. Like, these guys are amateurs. But if we roll in hot in our, like, sweats and stuff, they're like, oh, so they've been doing porn for a while.
Yeah.
They're, like, about to be getting ready.
Yep.
I feel like that's a lot more suspect. Because then we graduated to really renting houses.
Yeah, we did.
They're good enough to have a makeup girl come in before the porn.
Yeah. That's where you're really like, honestly, none of my business, I guess, like, which is great.
So we're drunk.
Yeah. and speaking of porn, that's really sort of like my vibe.
Yeah.
When it comes to the books we read.
Yeah. Brooke is the one that's going to bring the smut to the show. Bridget and I are going to bring the scares. And Brooke's going to bring the smut.
Mm-hmm.
More or less. Most of the time.
And we'll surprise you and ourselves. We'll all learn things about each other. But yeah, I think for the most part, these things are all so directly connected. Like, the human desire to be scared is not that different than the human desire to engage with, like, sexual content, erotica, and smut. It's all, like, overwhelm. It's all intensity. It's all building and getting you there. It's all edging.
It's all edging. Just like we are. We're edging.
Yeah.
A horror book club. And also, we are going to be launching a Patreon for this podcast, just as we do for 13. And on that, we were talking about Piss Kinks last episode.
Mm-hmm.
I will be reading all of, because the horror book that I read, it was because it was suggested if you like Saltburn. It wasn't exactly horror. It was more like grotesque body, but it was a very like intense relationship between two women in Australia. One of them was Nordic. Is that what you say?
I think that's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like,
I don't know what it is,
but there,
I think it
like
is a
Northern
thing.
Europe. And she was an exchange student.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Netherlands. Is that?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm very bad with geography.
If you want to tell us about it, feel free to engage with us anywhere, and we'll talk more about geography.
Yes, please let me know where I'm talking about. Anyways, I don't know where Northern Europe is. I know it's north. I know it's in Europe. Please help me. But
I think you just figured it out.
I will be reading all of the P mentions from that book that I just read. It was really, I mean, it was good. It was a really visceral book. It wasn't really horror, but it was just very visceral in the sense that, in the way that Saltburn was a horror, it was also a horror, but it's not really, like, more drama. But a very intense relationship between two women in Australia. But just dropped piss kink stuff. Not even piss kink, just talked about piss all the time. I'm going to read it all off to you. Just the piss mentions, though.
I still think that they didn't, the author didn't really understand what they were doing. And that it's all subliminal. Like, not subliminal, what is it? Subconscious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they're going to go back and read that in 10 years and be like, oh, shit.
Or maybe it's subliminal and you're going to go back and think in 10 years and go, oh, shit.
See, the author is apparently, I haven't listened to her music, but she's very visceral with her songs, too. It's, okay. It really opened me up. Like, I want to listen to her other stuff. Just a lot of piss content, though, that I was not expecting. I saw an Amazon review that
did
say.
You never see it coming.
Mm-hmm. You do with me, though, but there's a lot of asparagus.
Yeah, I could smell that. You never see it coming. I was like, no, but you know, with some other senses.
But anyway, so subscribe to our Patreon. You're going to hear us drinking. It's just at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful sounds. Subscribe to our Patreon, and I will read all the PP for you.
And another thing you can find on the Patreon, speaking of piss kinks, I got to go to the bathroom right now. If anyone's interested in hearing that, pitch us a price. Let's talk about it.
I'll piss for a price.
I'll piss for a price.
All right. That's an ad break if I ever heard one.
Alrighty, that was a wonderful ad break.
I loved all those ads.
Yes.
We definitely know what they are, and we definitely control them.
Yeah, we definitely figured this out.
That one of them is a meal kit that we enjoy.
I'm certain one of them was Chumba Casino.
I would fucking die if people didn't mail me food through the U.S. Postal Service.
I thought that was just a completely unrelated thought.
No, it's about our lovely sponsor. Beep!
Yep. That would be HelloFresh or Blue Apron or Factor. You know, we've had a lot of meal kits.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of meal kits.
Like I said, I would fucking die if the U.S. Postal Service didn't drop off.
Bridget literally survives off of the samples
refrigerated meat.
Us.
And honestly, in fact, if you don't let us advertise a meal kit through you and send us samples, you're killing Bridget.
Well, and this is something you probably don't know, but as a podcast listener, we know every one of your names and your addresses. We can see all that. Mm-hmm. So we can just go ahead and sign you up for these services.
And if you don't sign up, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to eat your leftover meat.
Well, Bridget's going to come to your house and steal it off your porch.
Yeah.
Because that's how she lives.
I'm going to be crouched down just eating it. I'll eat the refrigeration packages too.
Bridget sleeps upside down like a bat. She'll do whatever. She doesn't give a shit.
I need money. I need meat. That's why I got gout.
I want Bridget, but like as Honey Badger merch, but through the Kohl's candy collection. I only want you to be able to buy it at Kohl's. It's Bridget doesn't care. Bridget eats your porch meat. And it's just like fucking weird bad t-shirts.
That was three references that went right over my head. Amazing.
Anyway,
Kohl's Cash.
This is a book
club. This is
podcast.
A book club podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We are sober and ready to talk about books. Welcome to our Fundy Christian Mentalist book club podcast.
This is going great.
So actually, Brooke does have a book for us, Brooke's book, and it is going to be romance, since you don't like horror as much.
Yeah. I mean,
funnily enough, even though you talk about horror, you're our primary narrator.
Well, it's hard because what is really the difference between romance and horror when you are a heterosexual woman in a patriarchy? When you are attracted to your only natural predator and when you just accept at about age 10 that anybody you ever might start a relationship with could just kill you if they have a bad day.
Damn, I love thinking about that.
Me too. And that's why I brought a book
today. Us as two married women.
Yeah, two men married to men.
We're married to men who thought, bringing it back up again, that The Green Mile was a sports movie. So I think we might be okay. But anyway, so Brooke too. Has a book for us.
They don't have it in them.
No. And we love that. I also like toxically want to defend them. I'm like, they could kill me if they wanted to.
That was a really weird way for me to say that.
You're like, fucking cucks, can't even kill a girl. Like... anyway.
This is off the rails.
Here's the thing. I thought a lot about what kind of romance to bring because I've read a lot of romance books and I really weirdly didn't see myself as a romance reader until a few years ago. I mostly I really only read young adult fiction. I only read books that were targeted towards teenagers, maybe people in their 20s or younger, because I felt like it was the most engaging and exciting literature. And it spanned all genres. You know, it could be slice of life. It could be fantasy. It could be sci-fi, magical realism. But romance as a genre had never appealed to me because it felt like something that was for older women, or like the patriarchy had seeped into my brain. And I was like, I'm not like other girls. I don't read romance. And then I definitely read fanfic and engaged with erotica a lot as a younger person on that level. And I stopped thinking that I had to read books that would impress men who don't even know how to find the clitoris. And I started just reading books that were fun.
Ian, where's the clitoris?
That is a Nordic country, which we learned is in Northern Europe.
We don't know that for sure.
we think it's in Northern Europe. Correct us if you're from there and it's not Northern Europe. Mm-hmm. That would be a small town outside of Stockholm, I think.
Correct.
I started engaging with romance, I think probably around the pandemic, when I realized that I'd lost all of my passion for reading in college. I hadn't really read a book for fun on purpose. And I didn't know how to read anymore. So as a teenager, I'd been obsessed with Twilight, and I just started rereading Twilight, and that was great. I reread a lot of other books, and then I found romance that was targeted towards like real adult people with real adult relationships. And I think I just had this idea that it wasn't going to be like that. And then I engaged with it. I fell back in love with erotica. I started reading books again, and I started reading all kinds of books. And it reminded me why I loved books like this in the first place, because they help people read, and reading is powerful, especially when they're targeted towards a group like women. And, you know, people call 50 Shades of Grey, which is a Twilight fanfic, housewife smut. And it's like targeted towards women and like some of the women who have the least free time in the world. I love that. I love engaging people to read who don't think they can. So I was a person like that. I read a lot of smut. I read a lot of romance. And recently, I finally downloaded the Libby app. And I know all of you are screaming. I know. My best friend is a librarian. You know that meme on TikTok about, like, do you know what your best friend does for a living? No. I, like, kind of knew she worked at a library. But she was like, you need to get the Libby app. I will help you get your library card. You have to stop being like this. I checked out some books right before the pandemic hit and things got really weird. Anyway, all sorted. You can just get books on Libby. Audiobooks, regular books, whatever. Through your library card, it's free. And she said, you need to get this book. And I was like, okay. So I went to get it and the library said, girl, you need to get in line. So I waited for 3 weeks. And I'm a sucker for this kind of story. But I'll go ahead and just give you guys like the blanket synopsis and I'll let you guess some of the rest.
Well, first we have to look at the cover.
Yeah, we have mm-hmm. to literally judge a book by its cover here.
Judging Which a book by its do. Cover. So Ian, we don't have the book physically because thank God for the Libby app.
Mm-hmm. And because Ian and I can't read. So
yeah,
I don't need to just get the book.
Yeah. Also support your public library, support your local bookstores. We're a book podcast. We need to say that. But so Ian and I have Googled the covers, and I've not looked at it yet.
I have looked at it because I didn't know what we were doing.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Okay.
Bridget just gave me a look. It was pretty great.
You presented the book last time.
I know. I know. I kind of came up with the format, and I've already fucked it up.
We've been drinking.
Fine. Yeah.
And we'll keep drinking.
So I'm looking at it. There's a chair, and it looks like a balloon. I mean, I know it's a leather chair, but to me, it just looks like...
It does look like there's some pressure from within.
Yeah, like it's getting ready to bust.
I like the Entertainment Weekly says it's unspeakably hot.
Thank God for that.
And the, I guess the little blurb at the top says he was supposed to be a myth. I'm wondering who he is and what that myth was.
So I would not read this book on my own thus far, just because I'm not big into romance books, but I would watch a 10-minute TikTok about it.
I'm seeing the chair, and weirdly, I'm paying attention to the detailing on the, what I'm guessing is like wood carving at the top. And it does look a little bit menacing, which I like, but I also probably would not read this book by the cover. Even though I think the spelling of Katie, K-A-T-E-E, is kind of cool.
It's pretty cool.
Shout out Katie Robert.
Yeah, so if you're, I don't know, just like on Book Talk, Read Erotica, whatever, you know about Katie Robert. These books are pretty hot right now at the whole time. And I also, I don't think that this cover alone would have made me pick up this book. I think it definitely appeals to the old style of romance novels, you know, the kind of bodice rippers or pre-bodice ripper trying to make them look like very demure and like you could be reading anything. And so I wouldn't look at this book and think this book's going to make me wet. I'd be like, sure, that's a book. But having read it, I'm like, I mean, the cover is saying some stuff.
So I also just saw that Neon Gods is the first title, and then it says a scorchingly hot modern retelling of Hades and Persephone.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that actually does make me more interested in it.
It's book one of seven.
So I'm going to need you guys both to stop reading.
Okay.
You're breaking the rules. So I was going to present the summary as if it wasn't about Hades and Persephone, but that's fine, because that is also what drew me in. I am a sucker for Hades and Persephone. Absolute sucker for Greek mythology. So, for some context that I think is important, I'm a sucker for Hades and Persephone, but the original myth is called the Rape of Persephone.
Oh, wow.
And that's how mythology goes.
Yeah.
It is, mythology is also, it's fiction. It's the way that we make sense of our modern world. There's a lot of trigger warnings for this book, and they're all over Goodreads and everywhere. Sexual assault's not one of those warnings. That's not the kind of story that this is. Like, it's hard to engage with a myth through a modern lens without understanding, like, this is translated. This is oral tradition. This is passed down. We only have pieces of it. It's religion. It's fiction. And there's a lot of assault in religion. There's a lot of assault in fiction. There's a lot of assault in history. And there's a lot to unpack around that. This story definitely is pretty much all about giving Persephone the power. Homegirl's topping from the bottom. So there's plenty to love about this. And I think that it's, if you found this myth engaging and the story about this character engaging and you wanted it to feel different to engage with it, I think that this is a great book to start with. And it's a really cool story. In the Greek pantheon, Hades and Persephone always seemed a lot more like equals than a lot of the other gods. And it was a lot less icky than a lot of the other stories, despite its name. So it makes sense that the author decided to start here when she tackled the pantheon through a modern lens. But what do y'all think of the cover, having just seen it? Kind of raw, face value.
Is this where we rate the cover?
Yeah.
All right. Aesthetically, I like it. I think it's a cool piece of art. I don't think it would make me want to read the book necessarily. I'm going to give it a 7.
A 7 what? 7 chairs?
7-Eleven?
7-Elevens? 7 out of 11.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 7-Elevens too, just because I like that.
Having read the book, I give it a 5. I don't think it evokes enough about what we need.
Okay.
A 5 out of 7-Elevens.
Excellent.
How do we measure? Is that 5 out of 11, 5 out of 7, or 5 out of 18?
It's just the gas station.
5 out of the gas station.
5 out of the gas station.
Got it. Okay.
5, whatever your heart desires.
Okay.
No, actually, no.
These ratings don't matter, forget
that,
by the way.
Forget that. 5 of those edible condoms that you used to buy out of the gas station bathrooms when you were in middle school, like on a trip. Did you ever do that?
No.
Oh, we
you
used
never
to...
bought and then ate edible underwear at a Spencer's?
Yeah.
I think you guys had very different childhoods than I did.
We're Wolf House.
We're Wolf House, which we will explain to you all
in another episode.
In another episode. 7 out of 7-Elevens. 7 out of 7-Elevens. 5 out of 7-Elevens. I guess that's like 6.5 out of 7-Elevens. I don't know math.
Is this like 6.5 gas stations or 6.5 out of the gas station?
Edible condoms from the gas station bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot that we went that weird way. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Almost 7. And that's pretty good.
That'd probably send you to the emergency room.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good day,
no.
Honestly.
Let me tell y'all about this book. I thought a lot about which romance book to bring, and I have read this book pretty recently, and I've been pretty excited to read it because it was highly recommended to me. And then I realized that I thought this book in this series would be a great fit for this show, because I would definitely describe this as, I wouldn't necessarily say dark romance because that has different connotations, but I would definitely say dark smut. It has a lot of elements of horror. And one of the elements that I felt as I was reading it is like, if this wasn't a romance novel, I would have anxiety and panic in a very different way. There's an assumed outcome when you're reading romance. You're pretty sure that it's going to have a happy ending. You can expect that characters are going to have at least moments of happiness. So something that would be really horrific and terrible and terrifying feels different because you know that you can expect things to turn out okay.
Yeah.
So the premise of this series is that Olympus is a modern city. The gods aren't necessarily magical, but there are some elements of magic. So when I say the word pantheon, I mean the gods. I'm talking about Zeus, Artemis, Apollo, Hades. And in this context, they're elected officials. It's all politics, but they're not all elected. So Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades are legacy roles. It's like monarchies. It's like kings. You're born into it. Some of the other positions are competed for, like Ares, god of war, and other positions are voted in, like Demeter, who is Persephone's mother in both mythology and this story. So our heroine in this book, Persephone, is the like 23-year-old daughter of Demeter, who is an elected official in a corrupt, scary, very CW type world. It's a modern city that is hidden by some kind of magical barrier that no one really understands. From the rest of the modern world, and the people who live there are subject to these kind of cutthroat politics all the time. Persephone wants to leave. Her number one goal is to get out of the city. But she has, I think, 3 sisters. So she and her sisters are very close, and they love their mom, but they're wary of how ambitious their mother is. They're worried about what she might do to get more power. She moved them into the city. She wanted to be Demeter. She wanted to have this political power. And they're basically scared about how that could escalate. So we meet Persephone as she's at one of these high society parties in Zeus's tower. And she's talking about how she's looking at all of these statues of the 13, which is our pantheon in this modern world. So in mythology, these would be our gods. In this world, they're our politicians. It's this kind of group rule where everyone has this different power. And the statue that would be Hades has a shroud over it, because as far as Persephone and the rest of the upper city know, there is no Hades. The line has died out in the last generation. There's no way to elect another one, and there are no heirs.
So you got to be born Hades.
You have to be born as Hades, Zeus, or Poseidon. And then it passes down the family line. So they, the upper city just believes that there is no Hades. And she's at this party. She sees the statue, and she's always had this fascination with Hades. She, like, finds herself wanting to look at the statue. But she doesn't, because she doesn't want to get caught doing anything. Everyone is very worried about appearances, about how they might look to other people, about things that will be used against them, about their personality. So we are introduced to Persephone in this way. We know her goals. She walks back into the party. Her mother grabs her arm, and then her engagement to Zeus is announced. She had no idea that she was promised to him, and she's basically being forced into an arranged marriage by her mother. Things escalate pretty quickly from there. Zeus is, I think, like 2 or 3 decades older than her. And in this society, all of the women that he marries become Hera, so they become his wife and have this godlike role. He's gone through at least 3. And it is pretty widely understood that he's killed his wives.
So he's just like Henry VIII.
I was just about to say Henry VIII.
Absolutely. And this is one of the legacy roles. He's a monarch.
Really similar to Leonardo DiCaprio, too. About 3 decades older.
Absolutely.
Kills them all. Yep.
You heard it here first.
We're going to get sued.
We're going to get in trouble. News is going to come out next week, and we're going to have to cut it out.
Oh, Jesus.
Brooke, one of us is going to have to be under 25 again.
We'll just try our best. So, Persephone's only goal is to leave the city. She finds out that her mother, who she mostly trusts, has decided behind her back to promise her in marriage to basically the king of this city. He doesn't have all the power, but he has a lot of power and not a lot of checks and balances from the rest of the 13.
Also like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Known lobbyist for all political issues in the United States.
He's for and against every issue you've ever heard of.
100%. He's your enemy. He's your friend. He's a bad guy.
Hot damn, can he act, though. He really does.
He is good.
He's really good at that one thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, dating models and being on yachts.
Well, and also, like, convincing us all that he hasn't killed every wife he's ever had.
Never been married.
every girlfriend. It's modern.
It shows what I fucking know.
We all don't get married now.
Except me and Bridget.
And we never thought we would, so that's the funniest part.
That's why it's weird. Like, to men.
I don't know why I'm after Leonardo DiCaprio all of a sudden.
Yeah, you have to pick a vendetta and roll with it.
I do. I think I do this just about every episode, don't I? Yeah,
I get it. So our heroine has just been shocked. Her whole world's been turned upside down. So she just leaves the party and kind of just starts wandering the city. And then she notices that men are following her. And then she notices that they are herding her towards the river Styx. So in mythology, the river Styx is the river in the underworld. In this story, it is what separates the upper city from the lower city. She has never been to the lower city. And the only thing that anybody knows is that if they try to cross to the lower city, it will be physically painful. Like, there is also a barrier between the upper and lower city of Olympus, and it's not easy to pass between them. So they're herding her there so that they can capture her there. They're trying to trap her against a wall, and she knows that these are her future husband's employees.
So they're not trying to make her pass it. They're trying to get her up against it where she won't go.
So they can bring her back to her new fiancé she just learned about.
I see. Okay.
Who has way more power, is way older, and has a wake of dead wives behind him.
Fucking Leonardo DiCaprio.
and presumably is going to rule in this title for several more decades. She's not like looking down the barrel of outlasting this man. She's looking down the barrel of being broken and never achieving her dream of leaving the city. So she runs across the River Styx. She encounters a bridge. She sees the faint outline of a man on the other side. And she literally bloodies her feet like she's walking across broken glass.
Mm. Hell yeah, Sephi.
She fucking goes.
Hell yeah.
She crosses that bridge and the man cannot touch her until she does. And then she falls right into Hades' arms.
And with that, we're going to take another quick break.
These messages brought to you by the God of the Underworld.
And porch meat.
I fucking wish the God of the Underworld daddy would come on our show. We will advertise whatever you want, especially if it's porch meat.
Alrighty, thank you, Porch Meat, for keeping me alive.
While we were listening to those ads, Bridget actually scurried out of the apartment across the street and stole a Blue Apron package off of a porch. She's tearing into it right now. She hasn't even cooked it.
She never promised us she would.
Right here, because I got to keep it off camera. That's part of our deal with them.
Blue Apron is, you know, easy to prepare. Ready to make. Bridget just says, fuck it. Just,
you don't even have to take the plastic off of it if you don't want to. Tear it all to hell.
And she's not.
I am not.
She's got a mouthful of plastic right now.
50% plastic, 50% porch meat.
Also honestly, like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Also like Leonardo DiCaprio. And Brooke, as you were telling us before the ad break, Persephone has crossed the River of Styx, which was hella painful, apparently.
Hello. Yeah.
And landed in the arms of Hades.
Hades, a man
like like James Woods in a
like James Woods, but
hot.
Yeah, I mean James Woods is hot, but like James Woods, but Hugh Jackman hot.
Ooh.
So here's the deal. Up until now, Hades has been, for our queen Persephone, a morbid fascination mood. He's been mysterious and he's been dead. How we like our man. She falls into his arms and he is alive.
Oh my gosh. So real. I actually had a similar thing with my morbid fascination being with like men who actually like me. And now that's my husband.
That is
first guy I've ever dated who's actually liked me. So that's been really
honestly,
cool.
Honestly, I feel like that's exactly the same for me. You spend your whole life chasing this ideal of a man who actually likes you, but you continue to go after men who could not possibly have the emotional capacity to like you. And honestly, I think that's kind of Persephone. She can't really date because she's supposed to be on the surface this like pure, marriable, like untouchable in the gossip columns girl. And so she keeps all of her relationships private. She's canon bisexual. She dates men and women. And it's kind of like just like whatever. But then the rug just gets ripped out from under her by her own mother. She's betrayed. She's promised to the most dangerous man in Olympus with the most power, she thinks. And then she crosses into the lower city, which she realizes she actually knows nothing about. She like kicks herself for not questioning more. And she's just been trying to survive in this city. And she finds herself in the arms of this man that she just like imagined as this kind of dark fantasy figure, as this sort of mysterious factor that could have become anything. And he agrees to agrees to rescue. He basically, here's what happens. Rapid fire. She falls into his arms. Her feet are fucked. He takes her home. And he, like, throws her over his shoulder in a carry, and she's like, I'll fucking kill you right now. Like, she's immediately, like, roll of pennies in her fist, ready to kill this guy. 5'2", fucking, I don't know how tall she actually is, but she's ready to murder this guy. He's covered in scars.
She's canonically 5'2", we've decided.
Yeah. And wearing stilettos, and her feet are bleeding. Like, she's just crazy. So we love crazy Persephone.
Sephi. My girl Sephi.
We love Seph.
Oh, I like Percy.
I like Percy.
Oh,
we both talked about that.
That's fucking better.
Yeah.
Ian and I canonically have talked about how we would have named a child Persephone. We talked about this because I would have too. I was like, Persephone is good. And Percy would have been the name.
Percy would have been a great name, yeah.
That's perfect.
You could do it for us all. One day.
I could just get pregnant.
Yeah. And name. Or just get a child that
for,
you
for
get
us,
to name.
Bridget.
Yeah, for us.
Actually, if you'll put a child in a blue apron box, then I'll raise it as my own. Mail me a child. It's just a like you mail me my meat.
It's a 50-50 chance she raises it and a 50-50 chance she eats it.
Just like a farmer.
Just like any other animal in the wild.
Up next is Tender as the Flesh, the book that Bridget is bringing to us. Okay, so Persephone goes home with Hades, and he's basically like, you're coming home with me. And she's like, I'll fucking kill you right now. And he's like, no, you won't. And she's like, that's kind of hot that he like knows I can't, but like I will. So he takes her home, and the first thing that he does is bandage her feet. And she's like, whoa, hang on. Excuse me, my king. There's immediate attraction between these two. And the really cool thing about this book, especially the audiobook, but I think also reading it, is that each chapter switches between their perspectives. So we get this whole first encounter through Persephone's perspective, and then all of a sudden we're in Hades' head. And he's talking about how like fucking gorgeous she is. I'm like, I know, that's my girl. And how much he like needs to respect her. These books are plum full of consent. Like, it is so good, the consent in these books. Like, she's like, I think, so, spoiler alert, things progress, he's nice to her. She's like, honestly, I think the best course of action for us is if we fuck to piss Zeus off. And you're reading it and you're like, honestly, she's so right for that. And he's like, well, that's just not enough. Consent, we're going to need to talk more. And she's like, I think that you should fuck me so that we can piss Zeus off and ruin me for him forever. And then she's like, stain me. And he's like, this bitch is fucking me up. Like, that's like chapter three.
The bar is in hell that consent just has me and Brooke over here like
wiggling. Consent is so good. And modern romance has so much consent. And there's a lot of psychological, interesting, complicated reasons that consent is wobbly. And it's not fucking creepy Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines shit. It's women trying to engage with sex, which we've been told we're not allowed to engage with. There's a lot that goes into not having to be in control. It's fantasy. But it's also like so hot when the fantasy is like so self-aware that it's like, I know that you don't want to be in control, but I just need you to tell me that right now so that we can go forward with you not having to make any decisions ever for the rest of anything. And it's like, oh, just really keep checking the boxes, man. So basically, she convinces him. And politically, everything is just like crazy. She's in the lower city and her sisters are like trying to reach her. She calls them. They're like, what the fuck is going on? And she's like, it's actually like totally fine. I want to be here. And they're like, I know you're lying and I will burn down this entire city and kill everyone, including Hades. I don't care if he's real or fake. And she's like, and I love that. But like, he's really hot. So I need you to not do that right now. And they're like, girly bop, this is crazy. Like, we were not expecting this. So things start to progress. Zeus is horrible. And he was trying, like, he wants to possess Persephone. He wants to possess any of these women. And she's really scared that one of her sisters is going to get sacrificed in her place. She's not talking to her mother. She doesn't know what's going on or why her mother did this. And she's kind of isolated to the lower city. And then Hades is like down bad pretty immediately. Obviously, this bad bitch just rolled into his city, fucking bloodied feet, hot as hell, tries to kick his ass. And he's like, I'm obviously in love with her immediately. But they're both, he knows she wants to leave the city. So he feels like even though they can fuck, it just can't get that deep. So basically, they agree to engage in this relationship of pissing Zeus off. And both getting what they want out of it. So the plot keeps thickening. And I won't spoil too much of the plot as far as that is concerned. But I feel like there's an aspect of the story that's really important. Which is that Persephone is like, I think we should fuck. And he's basically like, I don't think you can handle that, princess. And she's like, grow up. And then he's like, okay. And then 50 Shades of Grey style, he's like, this is my sex room, which we love as a trope, especially because he's not like, this is my sex room where I like am creepy. He's like, this is my sex room where I host public sex parties. And she's like, that's fine. I love that. She's like, okay. So it escalates so quick that you're just reading it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, we're about to do a public sex party. And they do.
When you say public, what does public mean?
So at a Publix.
Yes, at a Publix in like Daytona Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows that if you go to Publix, you're almost certainly going to see some hardcore sex going on.
But yeah. That's what like, public means.
In Olympus, what does public mean?
They don't have a Publix in Olympus. So instead, because I was curious too, because the whole deal is that Hades is like the boogeyman of Olympus. He's like this scary other figure. And the lower city is like the seedy underbelly that the upper city doesn't know about. The lower city is just like a socialist utopia. And he's just like the ruler of it and people are normal. And in the upper city, everyone's like constantly worried about like all of this shit. And in the lower city, he's just like, y'all can't come and fuck up my shit. We have historical preservation. We're trying to protect people. There are social reforms. And she's like, social reforms? Like, they just walk around the city and she's like, I've never seen a building that old before. And he's like, girl, like, she's like, I really like it here. She just like talks about a guy walking to the laundromat in sweatpants. And she's like, it seems so safe. And so you learn that the lower city isn't what you thought. And the whole time I'm like, how are we going to do this public sex thing in a way that doesn't undermine him as a ruler? Like, this feels weird. I don't know how it's going to happen. So the deal is he has these parties that are invite only, and he invites people from the upper city who are in power. So the way that their plan works is that these people who are powerful and also like to engage in this kind of like free sex, sex party, whatever, get to come and watch him and Persephone fuck and then tell Zeus that Hades is fucking his girl.
Percy's down with this?
Yeah, she wants this. She's like, hell yeah. But Hades senses that she's a big fat liar and literally just like trying to peacock all the time. And she's like, what? I'm good. I'll kill you right now. And he's like, well, it's also okay if you're uncomfortable. And she's like, I've never been uncomfortable in my life. He's like, I actually think you're uncomfortable all the time. And she's like, if you see me one more time, I'm gonna freak out right now. Because he's noticing that she's uncomfortable. She hates it. So most of this section of the book is just them navigating falling in love. And she's like, I'm actually totally fine with having sex in front of everyone right now. And he's like, I don't believe you. So I'm going to eat you out. And then we're going to like cuddle and watch this couple have sex. And then she was like, that was actually what I wanted the whole time. And that was really great. Thank you for doing that. And he's like, I'm in love with you. Secretly can't tell you because I want you to be able to leave the city if that's your dream. So that's pretty much the dynamic we're working with.
It reminds me a lot about the relationship between Lyndon B. Johnson and Lady Bird Johnson, actually.
The dog or the person?
The person. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a dog named Lady Bird
on
Johnson?
King of the Hill.
On King of the Hill.
The dog's name is Lady Bird.
Amazing. Amazing.
Brooke, what the fuck?
I just only get my history from King of the Hill. So,
go on.
Oh, no, that was it. That was the end of it. Yeah, just everyone knows that that's how Lyndon B. Johnson and Lady Bird Johnson went down. You know, just...
I like how you were like, Brooke, that's crazy. Ian has something important in historical.
I don't know. I don't know geography. I don't know anything about history. It might be common fucking knowledge that Lyndon B. Johnson's just out there.
Fucking dogs.
He apparently did. And this is a sidebar that we can edit out if we want to. But apparently, canonically, Lyndon B. Johnson had like a fucking hog. Like,
oh. I think I've heard that. That's why it's called Johnson's, right?
Yeah. And he used to, like, as a power move, he would stand sideways at urinals so that like people would be able to see it. And he'd like be like dressing them down while he was taking a piss. And it was supposed to be like a power move. I think it would be weird. I don't think that would work on me.
But fantasy is that he was a grower, not a shower, and he had to jack it before he did that. Like, he had to get himself off in order to peacock at these other guys.
Also, that's interesting from your perspective, because we don't do that. I don't know how we peacock as...
Well, I mean, there's like the old vibe of being like, I'm hotter than you, but that's like nothing.
But I'm not going to show you my urethra and be like, here we go.
And I'm also not going to, like, nobody cares.
I think that's a very dated way of doing it, too, because if someone did that
your
to me,
urethra,
if
yeah,
someone did that
weird.
To me today and like they were standing at a urinal, like giving me a bunch of shit and like turning so I could take a look at their hog, I'd just be like, this is just a real weird situation. I'm just feeling real weird about this whole thing, but I'm not. This isn't going to like intimidate me. I'm just in a weird little, I'm in a weird place. Mm-hmm. This is a real weird conversation.
Well, and I think masculinity.
Why is Leonardo DiCaprio making this so weird?
Why is Leonardo DiCaprio showing you his hog?
I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio, and I can't prove this, and this isn't meant to roast him because I don't think this matters, but I feel like he'd be the kind of guy who turned around and showed you his tiny dick and he's like, yeah. He's like, and that's fucking right. And you're like, damn, that is weirdly a power play.
We've got it out for him tonight for some reason.
But no, I feel like if you show somebody your tiny dick and you're pulling like fucking models and you're just like, oh, you think that's cool? Well, me and my micro penis have shit to say. I just like, I don't get it. I think that that's the exact thing with feminine, like socialized culture is like, I would never think to whip out a part of my body and be like, see? I would just like.
In fairness, I wouldn't either. So I think it's a very particular type of man who thinks to do that.
But I think, yeah, we all might exist a little bit more in feminine culture because I think it is, I agree, very weird to think to pull out your dick. But I'm trying to think of what the equivalent of that is. I think it's kind of just like befriending someone and destroying their whole life or like. My instinct with men is obviously never, I mean, it's often to physically fight them, but that's not how I think I'm going to, like, get them in the long run. My instinct is usually to, like, become really good friends with all of the women in their life and then mother their children and then cuck them for the rest of eternity until I eventually kill them of heart disease by feeding them really fatty food they don't even like.
The way that I do it to intimidate other women is I whip out my breast and show them how large my areolas are.
Yeah.
And with that, we're actually going to take another quick break, and then we will be wrapping up this book.
All right, Bridget, how was that porch meat?
Oh my gosh, it was the best porch meat I've ever got. I don't know what animal it's from, or human. It's actually Lyndon B. Johnson Hog official porch meat.
Lab-grown official Lyndon B. Johnson.
That's what they do with the celebrity porch meat.
Yeah, we've cloned Lyndon B. Johnson.
I
and
mean
we continue
celebrity
to...
meat, not porch
No, celebrity porch meat.
Celebrity porch meat.
No, you had it right. Sorry, Bridget's a little drunk, but she had it right the first time.
Yeah, I'm eating celebrity porch meat.
Yep.
I would... MTV is making that, I'm sure.
And also, we gave Ian a lot of shit during the commercial break about saying hog.
It was the funniest word for a dick I could think of in the moment.
Isn't it wild that hog is spelled H-O-G, but no, it isn't because it's hog. Like, it's hog. There's a W in there.
What did you just say?
Hog.
I think that's just colloquial with us.
But I just don't think it's like... I think it's like at least an A-W. Hog.
H-A-W. I think when you're talking about a dick, it's H-A-W-G. That's how we differentiate.
Fair, no, that's fair.
I think it's crazy to be hog. Like, it's H-O-G. That's like hog.
Lyndon
no, it's like
B.
Hog.
Johnson hog. Because it was slanging down at the urinal.
Just pissing all over the wall to show his dog.
Can you fucking imagine?
Looking like a fucking fire hose you let go of.
That would actually be fucking crazy. If I walked into a bathroom and anyone with any equipment was just fucking loosely pissing on the walls, I'd be like, this is their bathroom. I'm going to go.
So if it was a woman, I'd follow her to hell, though.
Well, so, you know, like, there's like, regular urinals. But when you're, like, a little kid in elementary school, and in some bars I've been in Lexington, there are troughs. Mm-hmm. You know, the trough urinals. Any guys that are listening, for some reason, are... familiar with the trough urinal. If you're not, it's exactly what it sounds like, a big old basin, basically, that stretches 10, 15 feet along the wall. And there's no way to just not have your dick out.
That's so communal, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can also tell you right now, if you're a woman and you're listening, you're also familiar with a trough urinal because you've been drunk and had to pee.
Did you ever spotter pee with anybody growing up?
What do you mean?
Where you're both sitting on the toilet at the same time?
Yeah, I've also peed in a lot of urinals.
Did you say spider pee?
That's what we call. I did that as a little girl with my friend.
100% yes. I was like fucking 15 before I stopped taking baths with bitches. We were like having a party in there. Spider peeing is absolutely part of the girl experience.
It sounds so aggressive.
It is. No, because it's because you have like 8 legs.
No, I'm understanding. It just sounds so aggressive.
Not sweet. You got a lot of eye contact.
Now, hang on, Bridget.
Maybe this book that I read with all the piss kink in it was actually, maybe it was meant for me.
I think we're
maybe
picturing...
it's not actually a book. I just fucking dreamt this.
This is a podcast where we learn about ourselves.
I also, Bridget, I think you and I are picturing tandem peeing different. Why is there eye contact?
Because one girl is sitting, let me get the camera back on me. One girl sitting like this and one girl sitting like this.
No, absolutely not.
That's the only way that I could imagine it working. How are you imagining it working?
How do you tandem pee with your friends when you're 7?
I would just imagine it like a tandem bicycle. You're just like, you're both kind of little. You can like position yourself enough. Like one of you might be standing.
Yeah, but you know when you swing, did you ever spider swing?
Yeah.
So it was like that, but you were pissing.
Does it count if you're pissing in a bathtub?
I'll count it.
I'm just coming around to saying thank God for the trophy and all.
Here's all I can say about anything is that if I have bust in on you, if you are a man and I've bust in on you in a public bathroom, I'm sorry if you were startled. I had to go. Like, if you have not stood in a woman's bathroom line, we got a lot of buckles. We got a lot of buttons. I'm just going to need you to know that I don't care what the fuck your dick looks like. I'm not looking at it.
God,
I'm here to pee.
We would be
trough.
In the club and I would have to take off my fucking Spanx.
You're wearing a goddamn bodysuit. There are buttons.
Can I tell you guys about the time that I walked past a line of women to accidentally walk into the women's bathroom?
I would have killed you. I would have stabbed you with anything I had.
So I was on my way to Chicago, and there's a gas station. We stopped to get snacks, go to the bathroom, whatever. And the hallway to the bathrooms, right? At the end of the bathroom is the women's room, which I did not know was the women's room because I guess I just didn't look at the sign. Mm-hmm. What I saw was a line of women who stopped in front of another door on the sidewall, right? Now, in retrospect, they're stopping there because people are coming and going from mm-hmm. it, so they're not trying to be in front of it, but it looked like they were lined up for that door. But that was the men's room. And I walked past a line of 5 or 6 women and then just fully walked into the women's bathroom.
I accidentally cut
and
someone off.
And immediately turned around and walked back out, and they were all just so fucking looking at me.
I accidentally cut someone off like that in a bathroom in, I think it was the Chicago airport. But it's because
lots of weird pissing in Chicago.
Lots of weird pissing
in
Chicago.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the pissing city. But I actually had it.
That's what they call it.
I had a UTI.
It fucking is the pissing city because they have no goddamn public bathrooms, and I'll piss on the sidewalk again in Chicago.
I was in the airport, and I had a UTI coming back from my honeymoon.
No.
I was sweating. I was sweating 29 hours to get back to America from Ireland. And I cut this lady off and she goes, excuse me, I was next. And I'm like, okay, you could go on. I'm sorry. And I just stood there and I was like, I don't know who's listening. Gods, demons, Hades, Persephone. But if somebody could make it to where I don't feel like I have to piss anymore, mm-hmm. I'll just worship whatever you porch me. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Having a UTI on your honeymoon is fucking wild.
It's awful.
It's also crazy that porch me won. Porch meat showed up.
That's actually how I cured my UTI.
I walked into a restroom once. This is a weird story. Not a weird story. It's a funny story. But I walked into a... I drive around a lot for my job. I'm out and about, so I encounter a lot of gas station bathrooms. I walk into a gas station. I go directly to the bathroom. And I push the door open. And I don't know if the door lock was broken or if the person inside didn't lock the door by mistake. But there's a man sitting down taking a shit.
I remember this.
And he's just, there's no stalls. It's just a single toilet bathroom. He's just out there in the open. He's taking a shit. He like yelps kind of. And I also kind of yelp. I'm like, oh God, I'm sorry. But out of habit, as I'm like a step or two in, I turn around real quick and I leave. And out of habit, I fucking hit the light. I turn the light out on him. And I let the door shut. And he's yelling. And I'm not going to go back in there to turn the light on. But I feel bad that I've left him in the dark. And I just walk out of the gas station. Yeah. And Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House was playing outside in the night. Coming from the gas pumps. And it was like this bizarre, prescient moment. And that's, that was the last time I was in Corbin. So
yeah. Anyway, Neon Gods.
Yeah. Anyway, Neon Gods. Also I would fully do that to a woman and then I would walk back in and I'll be like, sorry, bitch. And I would turn the light on and she would be like, do I know you from somewhere? Fucking pussy out. And we would have a whole goddamn conversation.
I would sit down and spider pee with her really quick.
I'd be like, honestly, girly, I have to go. Can I go in the sink? And she'd be like, nah, bitch, come spider pee real quick. So you fucking jump on her lap and then you're like basically nose to nose. And I'm like, have you read Neon Gods? And she's like, girl, I still have that on hold from the library.
I'm in line on Libby.
And then we listen to the first chapter sample together in the bathroom as we spider pee. But that won't get us to where we are in our synopsis, which is a little bit later down in the story. So when we left off with Hades and Persephone, we were talking about public sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this story escalates quick. And there's a lot of tags if you read fan fiction that you can kind of sort by and like understand what a story is going to be like. I would definitely call this story porn with plot. But the plot is good. A lot of female gaze type porn or erotica, a lot of the books that I read, it's a slow burn and the payoff is fucking, it creams outward. That shit is nasty. It's so good. But it's also really refreshing to read a book that gives you the sex right away and then keeps delivering on it as the romance is growing. A lot of times when I read a book, like you get to know the characters and it becomes like really believable and you're super invested. But then I'm like sitting on the couch and Mason, my husband, is like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm reading and I'm listening to this audiobook and I'm just staring at the floor and like, I've been waiting for like 8,000 words for these two characters to fucking kiss. And it's happening. This book isn't like that. This book is, we are fucking in a public setting and other people are watching so that they can make a cuck of the king of the city. And it's like chapter 3 or whatever. I'm having a good time. And then the story keeps developing. The plot keeps developing. This is part of like a 7 or 8 book series and all of the books are hot. I'm not here to talk about another book. I'm just saying, if you know anything about Achilles and Patroclus, and if you fuck with that, what if they were in a triad with Helen of Troy? Maybe you would fuck with that too. It's a great book series. And for those of us who are here in this room, me, Bridget, Ian, and for those of us Ooh. Who will join us on our Patreon, I would love to tell you how this book ends.
Tell us.
If we are bleeping this part out for you, it's because you should read the book. And if you're joining us on Patreon, you should also read the book and then listen to us talk about the end of it. It's a great book. It's hot. You deserve it. And listen to it. The audiobook actors are awesome.
Ooh.
You like don't know what's going on. You're stressed. You're like, fuck.
And that's the end.
In the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, clinging to a door.
Just like, wait, yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like the ending of Titanic. Spoiler alert for Titanic.
Yeah.
A movie that was made 30 years ago.
Alrighty. So, Ian, do you think you'd read that book?
I don't think I would, because I don't know Greek mythology enough mm-hmm. to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it sounds pretty cool. I like political thriller things. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I would read it with that tie-in. Although, I think I would probably enjoy it if it weren't mythology tied in.
Yeah.
So maybe reading the book, I would enjoy it. Just, I'm sure there's some level of accessibility for people who aren't super into that. And if that's the case, then mm-hmm. I probably would like it. Yeah.
I would say, just for anyone who might be feeling the same way, I love mythology. And there's not anything I think you would be missing.
Okay.
It's just the way the characters kind of are generally.
Yeah.
So I think you could definitely read it, and that wouldn't matter.
Okay. I would still, based on how you've described it, I think I'd keep it at a 7.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd keep it at a 7.
I would bump it up to an 8, 7, 11
mm-hmm.
neon edible condoms
mm-hmm.
That you eat on a middle school field trip because you have it accessible to you at the time. Because you're stopping at a gas station.
Back when people just had lots of coins in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have enough coins in the bathroom anymore.
Nobody take coins to the bathroom anymore.
You know what I say about coins in the bathroom, though? More bouncy balls, as many edible condoms as we have flavors for. Let's just go ahead and put bathroom cologne to rest.
Yeah.
Take out bathroom cologne. Free tampons.
Yes. Love that.
Free them.
It's like that guy, that comic a while back that had that bit about how he went into a bathroom and he saw Metallica Rules on a bathroom wall, and then someone marked out Rules and put Sucks. Then someone marked out Metallica and put Your Mom. And then he thought to himself, man, a lot of people shit with pins.
I remember before we hop off here, I was 15 when the drummer for Avenged Sevenfold passed away. So I was in a bathroom in, I think, Nashville, Tennessee, and I wrote, because I wanted to graffiti for the Rev, is what he was called. I wrote a bunch of Avenged Sevenfold lyrics in my lipstick in a public bathroom.
Tell me you threw that lipstick away.
I fucking hope I did, but it wouldn't surprise me if I didn't, because I...
Listen, it's hard when you're 15.
God, I was the worst 15-year-old. But anyways.
That's the most Tumblr thing I've ever heard, though.
I didn't even have access to Tumblr. We didn't even have good enough internet.
It doesn't matter. You were there in spirit.
I was a Tumblr girl who didn't know what Tumblr was.
I was, too. I didn't know what Tumblr was.
I didn't have good enough internet to get Tumblr.
Yeah, I would have been a Tumblr boy if Tumblr existed when I was the age to be a Tumblr mm-hmm. boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would read this book, but I would love to hear everything about it from mm-hmm. you.
Agreed. Which is 1,000%.
Why it's a good thing that everybody has this podcast now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a podcast. This is a podcast about books that we think you should read.
Yeah. It's not just us talking.
That it's also a podcast about Lyndon Johnson's Hog.
And piss kinks.
Yeah. We're thinking of both Lyndon Johnson's Hog or Piss Kinks as titles. If you don't like edging, let us know. You can vote between those three on our Patreon.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrons can vote on the name of the podcast. We're not going to listen, but you can vote on
it.
Yeah.
You can vote if you're a patron.
Yeah. It won't mean anything, but please vote.
You give us enough money, I'll call this podcast whatever you want, but enough is a complicated term.
I was going to say, if you give us enough money, I'll call my dad and tell him that I have a new podcast called Lyndon P. Johnson's Hog. Johnson.
No, we're combining it all.
Lyndon Piss King Johnson's Hog, and I'll explain to my dad what every one of those words means.
Yeah.
My 73-year-old father, I'll do that if you all give us enough money.
Mm-hmm.
I have no moral code.
Mm-mm.
None of us do. Bridget sleeps upside down and needs porch meat off of other people's porches. So,
yeah. I don't give a fuck if it's your porch meat. It's mine now.
She's coming to get your porch meat.
She is.
All right. This has been Edging.
A horror Book Club Podcast.
A part of the title that I can't say.